Chapter 10. 1898 to 1910 New York. The blood from birds, mice, and other small animals helped Finley regain his strength. Moments later, we made our way to St. Catherine Docks, and I searched for the human Russell. I found him sitting in a small shack a few feet from the pier, immersed in paperwork. When I told him that Sylvanus had sent us, he tensed up and stumbled out of his chair, moving to the corner of the shack. I didn't question his mortified action, but I assumed my appearance at the pier was earlier than he expected. Still, this human somehow managed to arrange for us to board the next available ship heading to America. Lucky for us, there was a ship preparing to set sail for New York the next morning. He wasn't much for conversation, and after he helped to get us on board, he disappeared. Finley and I made our way to the lower decks and secured an area in the back near the storage area. We used a thin white sheet to separate ourselves from anyone with prying eyes. I covered the small peephole to block out the sun while Finley scoured the area, retrieving a small wooden crate where we could store the rats we caught for the entire voyage. Later, we made our way back to the main deck. The next morning, the ship pulled away from the harbour and we said our goodbyes to London. Maintaining our diet while out to sea became a challenge like no other. First, we started with humans, using our keen sense of smell to pick out potential meals who had become sick during the voyage. Although their blood wasn't the tastiest, it satisfied us for the evenings out to sea. After we finished, Finley later would throw the bodies overboard, and they went unnoticed for a few days. However, when the human crew began to keep record on all passengers, we had no choice but to turn to the rats storing aboard. They were plentiful and we never ran out. On some nights, when the moonlight glistened over the top of the still ocean water, I stood out on the deck, staring into the horizon. There I found peace, and I could allow myself to think without being disturbed. What awaited us in New York should have scared me. But I thought about the possibilities that maybe Finley and I would no longer be involved in this demon and vampire fiasco. Instead of waiting for this ancient to appear and greet us after our arrival, I wanted to secretly leave the ship and disappear into the city. My superb hearing picked up nothing, but my sight narrowed in on darkened images below the dark blue waters. About 50 feet down, I saw pools of fish, what looked like a shark, and another fish I couldn't make out. A large whale swam underneath us, heading south. I headed back to our sleeping area an hour before sunset, and Finley and I sat across from each other, communicating telepathically about what we planned to do once we reached the American shore. We also thought about how to react if our demon contact found us, or if we stumbled upon demon sanctuaries. Finley had had his fill with sanctuaries, and he decided that if we ever did run into more of our kind, we would leave the city immediately. Sylvanus gave us enough money so we could go anywhere. As the days turned to weeks, I became bored and befriended a teenage human girl who later joined me on the decks shortly after sunset. She told me about her father's death and how her mother decided to leave London for America in search of a new life. I found her to be relaxing to talk to, and her scent addicting. Finley found out about her, and angrily he told me to stay away. "They are our food, not our friends," he said. I agreed, just so as not to make him angry, and the next night I'd learned that the human girl had died. He killed her, but I had no proof, and I didn't want to confront him about it. Our ship arrived in New York City at night with 30 people less than when it left London, and with no demon to greet us on the shores. We disembarked at Castle Clinton and in demon speed we lost ourselves through the crowd, bypassing immigration and entering the city. Finley decided to move to the Irish slums, and there we found a tiny apartment right smack in the middle of other humans. We could afford the payment, but the smell of our food walking around us kept the notion of blood on our already fragile minds. Still, we prepared the small room for morning, and that night, with empty stomachs, we left to explore the city. "This place is bigger than I imagined. I don't like it," he said to me. But I loved the city's vastness. We walked along the streets, pointing at the awes and wonders of the tall buildings and the plethora of people. The air smelled of a mixture of smoke, mud, body odour, and human sweat. Humans were everywhere, young and old, short and tall. They came from all walks of life, Ireland, England, Germany. I thought that after a while he would become comfortable in the city, but Finley never did. We came across an intersection of horse-drawn buggies and crowds of people.
It wouldn't make sense if there were no demon here.
He paused and stared at the bustling city and its inhabitants.
I'd rather there not be. I held onto his arm. I'd love it if it was just us.
It will never be just us, he continued to gaze. How long do you think we should stay here?
The demon who wants me was supposed to meet us here.
Maris, I've had enough of ancient demon. I'm asking you, how long do you think we should stay here?
I thought for a moment. For as long as we like.
Then we should fit in.
He examined his clothes, and then he examined mine.
We need better clothing. My trousers are tattered. We look like orphans.
We are orphans.
Not in that sense, he replied. There are clothing shops on every corner. We can break into one and take what we want.
Why not steal the clothes from our victims? I suggested.
Because for once in our life we should have the best of things. He nodded. We will look our best.
I'd never seen this side of him, and I wanted more of it. As the nights passed, finding a meal became easier and easier. Soon any thought of the demon we were to meet and demon in general faded from our minds. It came to a point that I no longer felt that my life was in danger, and I purposely lost myself among the city's architecture, spending hours during the night standing just outside of taverns, listening to human interaction. At one point I followed a large overweight man who stumbled home, drunk and incoherent. After robbing him of his money and his blood, I left his body near an abandoned building next to a stack of rotted wood. Finley didn't like my nightly activities alone without him. He still stressed the importance of being together, but again, we still hadn't seen any demon in the city. For years I did this, and not once did I think that the vampires would come to get me, and I had long given up on the female ancient Sylvanas told me about. I finally felt free to live my life, but at the price of knowing that at any moment, things could take a dramatic turn, and they did. At the turn of the century, we watched New York transform from a city of immigrants to a bustling metropolitan monster. Machines with four wheels began to appear on streets now paved with red bricks. Streetcars appeared attached to a thick cable that covered the city like cobwebs, moving up and down the streets. More humans turned to the subways underneath the city as means of travel. We had no choice but to adapt and intermingle among the humans if we wanted to survive. We moved from apartment to apartment, with each one being better than the last. We handled our first few kills in the city with care, but after realizing that deaths happened quite frequently in the city, we relaxed and did what we did best. My requirement for a perfect meal consisted of an adult male in his mid-twenties, strong, single, and preferably Irish. If I couldn't find one, I went after young Irish boys. Finley liked the single upper-class women. How he managed to get them to trust him proved beyond my comprehension. All I knew was that he'd pick one out. Nights later, he had her wrapped around his finger, and a week later, her body was found drifting in the bay. He took their money and jewellery, offering it to me like some prize. He didn't want me to wear my mother's amulet, but I vowed to never take it off, so he sold his stolen lockets, rubies, diamonds, and emeralds, and bought me various things, including a face massager and makeup, so that if I wanted, I could cover the scar on my left cheek. He learned from the women he slaughtered that lemon juice worked to tone human skin, and perhaps it would work for me. However, I accepted my scar and rarely covered it. The longer we stayed in New York,
the more I noticed a drastic change in Finley's behaviour. He began to do terrible things to his victims that could haunt even the strongest demon. He no longer stopped after killing his victims. Later, he'd go on to kill their mothers, fathers.
Blood, power, betrayal, the eternal hunger of the demon never fades. If you're drawn to dark, supernatural worlds, ruthless immortals, and stories laced with danger, intrigue, and the struggle for dominance, then step inside the world of the Demon Chronicles, where power, blood, and betrayal rule the night. Get early access to narrated chapters, exclusive lore, and much more only on Patreon. Join now at patreon.com/IsaianMorrison.
And siblings if they had any. He wiped out entire families just because he could. Some of his deeds made the front page news and he kept the articles like trophies. He started to talk about sanctuaries and the thought of siring offspring. I urged him to calm down in fear that his actions would bring too much attention to us, but he didn't care. After 5 years of non-stop killing, I begged for us to leave New York. The glitz and glamour had waned. I didn't fear that we would be caught, but that he would go so far that not even I could bring him back. His behaviour reminded me of the conversation I had had the night of the vampire hunt with Ruby. My ancestor created Demon to keep the vampires in line and vice versa, but in New York there wasn't anyone to do that. Thus, Finley continued to do whatever he wanted, without fear of reprisal. No one was around to keep us in check. He also continued to profess his love for me, yet as I watched human couples holding hands and kissing, the concept of love confused me. For him, love meant sharing his meal and wiping the blood off my face after feeding. It meant breaking the arms of humans who pointed and gossiped about my scar. That couldn't be love. I remembered love as being unconditional. Love was something that couldn't be proved in acts of violence. But I didn't doubt his attempt. I wished that one day it would just make sense. However, one fateful night in January of 1910 made me realize that it just couldn't happen. The cold air from the north brought snowflakes clouding the air. I wanted to be out in it, so I urged him to join me. I dressed myself in a white hobble skirt with a straight black jacket and a medium-sized white-brimmed hat to match. He lazily dressed himself in dark trousers and a striped navy blue blazer. Walking down the street, I held out my hand, and a few flakes landed on my palm. I eyed them, seeing the detailed patterns that made up their little bodies. With every passing winter, the snow count changed, and I loved that not even we, as godlike as we thought we were, could predict it. I cherished the cold, fluffy stuff, and played in it whenever I could. After I showed Finley my captured snowflakes, he swiped them off my hand. "You do that every year. Don't act like you haven't seen snow before." I caught another snowflake. "I like it when they don't melt against our skin." I showed him the tiny flake as it sat still in my chilled hand. Again he slapped it out of my palm. "Just like every other cold thing in this world." He caught one himself, then made a fist, crushing it. I stopped walking, and I looked up at the cloudy sky. "Do you think it also snows in other American cities?" He dropped his hand. "Perhaps." "I'd like to go to one of those cities, soon."
He pouted. "Please, Maris, don't bring up this subject again."
But I wanted to bring it up. "We've never been to San Francisco. We should go." "All of these human-made cities are the same." His facial expression turned stark. "How would you know that? We've never been to any city but the one we are in now." "Although I couldn't care less for New York, we're safer here," he replied. "We're the only demon in this city. For years we haven't had any problems. Why would you want to risk that now?"
Before I could reply, he grabbed my hand. "I know what will make you feel better." He led me down the street. "The other night I saw these human males standing about a tavern. They're different from other German immigrants we've seen. We should taste a few of them.
Maybe they're more to our liking.
I pulled away. I like Irish.
You might like German as well.
He motioned for me to follow him, and I had no choice. We continued to walk down the street and turned the corner, coming upon two males standing in the alley. They didn't look German. They looked back at us, surprised that we had encroached upon them without noticing. Finley also seemed surprised at their appearance, and he stood still. These are not the humans from the previous night.
Well then, let's be on our way, I replied back through our telepathic connection. However, something did not seem right about them. The way they stared at us was different from the way most humans stared at us.
They look interesting enough, his thoughts answered mine. He moved forward then, in a movement that amazed me, and then he took quick steps back and away from them. Maris, they're blocking their thoughts from me.
It didn't resonate with me at first, but I thought about the situation a little more. Humans didn't know anything about Demon, so why did these two brace themselves for our mental attacks? I stared at the bulkier male with short brown hair while he looked at his partner. I tried pushing through his thoughts, but he fought back, pushing forth an image of a brick wall. Finley rushed at the thinnest male, and he slammed him against the building by his neck.
Who are you?
He growled. The bulkier male had turned and began running from us. Finley quickly yelled at me, Stop him! I didn't know what to do, and without thinking, I moved fast, blocking his way out. He stumbled and fell back in fear. Finley returned to questioning and threatening the other human who remained quiet, refusing to answer his questions.
I'll kill you slowly if you make me ask again.
The thin human trembled and he reached into his pocket, pulling out a stake. This angered Finley and he bit into his neck, pulling off bits of flesh. The human screamed, but Finley quickly snapped his neck and the human's lifeless body dropped to the ground. I stood still in front of the other male who now started to plead for his life.
They aren't vampires and they aren't demon.
Finley moved toward him.
How do you know about us? Are you following us?
The human whimpered.
Please don't kill me, I beg you.
Finley pushed him to the ground. They have to be working for the vampires, I know it. Finley knelt next to him. We should kill him now.
Finley, not just yet. I aimed to calm him. It would be stupid of us to kill him without knowing who sent him.
No one sent me. The human nodded frantically. They said she was dead, he whispered and looked at me.
Interested, I approached the human. Who said I was dead?
Dorvo vampires. They said you were killed in the fire back in London.
I told you, he's working for them.
Finley quickly stood up.
No, I'm not working for them, I swear.
Then who are you working for? I asked. The human hesitated, but when he looked at Finley again, he spoke up. I'm a researcher from the Brotherhood.
The Brotherhood, Finley said in a low growl. Disgraceful humans who think they can control us.
I didn't waste any time letting the realization sink into my brain. I wanted to know how long the human had been following us, and if there were others.
How long have you been here?
A few months.
I asked the human, who else in this city knows about me?
He didn't answer, so I asked again, but with a deep and more threatening voice.
Tell me.
Finley placed his foot on the human's chest.
Answer her!
No one, I swear. Finley turned to me. He's lying.
Of course he's lying, I replied back.
Finley quickly snapped the human's neck. We stood in the alley, contemplating our next move. We knew what we had to do. We had to leave New York. Any relief about being able to live my life without the thought of demon and Dorvo vampires hanging over my head faltered in the wind. Years of joy and the thought of being alone in New York disappeared quickly, replaced with the thought of survival.
Those damn vampires are here, Finley said. They will find us soon.
Then we leave, tonight if we must.
Where? He said to me in a sarcastic tone. San Francisco.
Right now, I don't care where, Finley. We just have to take what we can and leave.
If they are this resilient and can hide among us for months, there's no telling what else they can do, he replied, and nodded to his own statement. We need to send them a message, Maris.
No, if we do leave, we must leave silently.
No. They have to know that we aren't afraid of the Brotherhood and these vampires. We need to send the same message Sylvanas sent to them back in London. His eyes turned stark. You know it must be done. He walked back to the body of the bulkier male he'd killed earlier. He grabbed a fistful of hair and tilted the human's head back.
He began to pull, and I heard flesh tearing apart, followed by a loud snap. We can't run from them forever. He raised the human's severed head in the air. Will you help me, Maris? Will you help me send the bodies of these two humans back to them in pieces?